At TikTok, we're known for entertainment, but behind the scenes, we're committed to safety within our community. That's why we set all TikTok accounts aged between 13 and 15 as private, with no access to direct messaging. Our family pairing tool lets you link your account to your teens, so you can adjust what content they see and manage how long your family spends on TikTok with our screen time management tool. Safety. Your priority is our commitment. Search TikTok Guardian's Guide to learn more.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
4 minutes after 12 is the time. Just, I told you that Woke Watch was a cracker. Someone's just found an article from the Mail Online in 2009 where David Starkey, widely regarded as a champion of the anti-woke movement, found evidence that Henry VIII actually had a stair lift at Whitehall Palace, or a stair throne. And wheelchairs. So he was arguing with another historian about the fact that Henry VIII was actually disabled. So I told you that was a cracker. But we digress. Time now for Mystery Hour. Time for more important matters. Your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. If you have a mystery that needs solving, this could be the pot of gold at the end of your personal rainbow. A who, a why, a what, a where, a when, a whither, or even a wherefore. Ring in with the question. Somebody listening will hopefully know the answer, and they will then ring in with it. The only rule is this. You're not allowed to look stuff up. Seriously. You can't Google it. You can't reach for your Encyclopedia Britannica, and you can't just pull a book off your bookshelf. But you have to know the answer already. So when I say, what are your qualifications, you will reveal to me how you know the thing you know. It doesn't mean you've got a PhD in applied mathematics or anything like that. You might have just seen it on the telly last night, but you have to prove that you... I mean, it's not rigorous. I'm not going to ban you from the programme or zone you out. Is it zone you out? This is a lovely message. Did you just zone that caller out with the volume knob? I say that's no way to talk about Keith, honestly. So I'm not going to do anything brutal but just don't do it. There you go. Don't ring in with an answer to a question that you've just looked up, because we could all do that and it would make a complete mockery of the game. And you don't want to make a mockery of the game, because it's so good now that it has its own board game, the Mystery Hour board game, which took pride of place under all the most loving families in the country had the Mystery Hour board game under their Christmas tree this year. So I'm sorry if you didn't. That must be awful to be living in that sort of emotionally bereft environment. But fear not, it's still available. MysteryHour.co.uk is the best place to get it, or Amazon have it, and many branches of John Lewis have it as well. So, I mean, it's so much fun, as you know, if you've got it, but of course you won't know if you haven't. And you can win one by providing the best contribution to Mystery Hour of the day, according to me, as in my judgment is final, like the management, you know. Terms and conditions are available at lbc.co.uk. Shall we Finnegan begin again? Yes, we shall. Olivier is in Reading. Olivier, question or answer?
How could it be an answer, James? Hi, James. I mean, I think I'm the first question, so...
Who knows?
It's the question.
Who knows? Stranger things have happened. Go on.
I would like to know why the capital of England is called London, and in particular why it's called London rather than Londres. So I guess a bit of context...
Yes.
In 1066, England was civilized by William.
Crikey, we put some cats among pigeons in the last hour. I don't know that we've scaled quite the same heights as your very casual jingoism, Frankish jingoism, Gallic jingoism being thrown into the yes. So when the feral Saxons were civilized by the Normans in 1066. Carry on.
Absolutely. So they brought French language to the courts. They gave places names like Beaulieu or Beauty,
yes.
Locals call it.
Which means beautiful like place, doesn't it?
I think since Brexit, it's probably called Nice Place. Yeah.
Once beautiful place.
The Order of the Garter has a French motto like "On y soit qui mal y pense." So why is London not called Londres?
Because they didn't do that. I mean, why is York still called York? Why is Birmingham still called Birmingham? I mean, I don't know what's in the Doomsday Book, but they didn't embark upon a campaign of place name change. Beaulieu was probably either very unknown at the time, and they decided to build a castle there. Therefore, the Duke got to name it, or it didn't even have a name at all. If you're going to go back to the 11th century, the map would have been a very sparse document. So I don't think this is a mystery at all, Olivier.
I'm disappointed.
I know. Did they rename
London?
I don't think they would have done. I think it's a bit like, I mean, if you think of the Roman Empire and the way that they, I mean, they did a more renaming than the Normans did, but the trick was not to change too much, you know, keep the native, you don't want the natives to be restless. So they would, in the context of religion, they would often, that's why Christianity, as exported by the Romans, often adopted a lot of the traits of the religion of the country that they were invading or conquering. Easter being perhaps the best example in the Christian calendar, having so much to do with Druid traditions and pagan traditions. So I just don't think that William's, I mean, he wasn't bothered about what the capital was called. He just wanted to get hold of the tower and fill it with money, didn't he?
Yeah, quite possibly. I haven't asked him, but yeah, quite possibly.
That is the answer. It just was. It was never on the agenda. And Bewley, although it seemed like a wonderful counterpoint, is nothing of the sort. I'm trying to think what else. So, I mean, they changed their own names to English names, didn't they, as time passed? The knights would like Grosvenor, who's now the Duke of Westminster, their original name would have been two words, probably. The French names got anglicised, as opposed to the English names being gallicised, if that's the word.
Indeed, yeah.
And Londinium, being the name under the Romans, just stayed, just got, like all the other Roman place names, got sort of trimmed and evolved. So there it is. That's your answer. Qualifications? Well, I just say, you know it all. Yeah?
Fair enough.
Merci.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Olivier. John's in Bournemouth. John, question or answer?
Oh, hello, James.
Hello, John.
It's about snowdrops.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, in my garden, there's a lovely patch of snowdrops, but they always come up and flower about the second week in February.
Do they?
And they do, yeah.
Okay.
And also, Kingston Lacey, a great National Trust property, they've got millions of them come up. They always come up at the same time.
Are they on the National Trust property?
I think so, yeah.
They're woke snowdrops, then.
Oh, right, yeah, of course they are.
You want to look out for them. They're woke snowdrops, mate. They're not good. You want good old-fashioned anti-woke snowdrops. So how do they know?
What is the biology behind it? I mean, they don't have a thermometer in them or a calendar.
Well, they might. That's why I'm surprised it's always the same calendar week, because I would have thought, because there's quite a lot of examples, aren't there, of things flowering early or even flowering twice because of climate change and because of fluctuations in the sort of meteorological calendar.
That's true, but my particular patch, whether it's a rock-hard frozen ground or a very warm February, they always flower at the same time.
Well, that's fascinating.
What's the biology behind it?
I shall find out. Well, I shall try to find out for you. Well, how do snowdrops know when it's time to flower is the way to phrase the question, albeit a little odd because they're not, of course, sentient. See what I did there? But we shall put it on the list. A lot of people pointing out the Normans were more Viking than French, which is absolutely fine. Sorry. I don't know, but the language was French, wasn't it? And the question was about language. 11 minutes after 12 is the time. Jennifer is in Torquay. From Bournemouth to Torquay. Look at that. It's delightful. Jennifer, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on.
How do bananas make other fruit ripen quicker?
Gas.
Oh,
they release a gas which accelerates the ripening of other fruits. I don't know why, but I do know that it's. Well, I'm pretty. Oh, I always do this. I say it with such confidence, and I start explaining myself, and I feel my confidence seeping away, like a wave retracting on the beach of Torquay. I think it's a gas because if you put them in a brown paper bag with other fruits, it happens even quicker.
Oh, if you put them in a bag.
Yeah. If you put the banana in a bag with an avocado, it will soften. It's usually an avocado you use it for, right?
Well, we don't use that many bananas, but every time we do buy them, we just say, well, don't put it in with the other fruit.
Because it will speed up too much. I think generally in a fruit bowl you're all right, but if you put them in, it must be a gas. What else could it be? Magic?
Well, this is what we want.
I'm not going to take a round of applause because I've already had one and it gets a bit boring if I take them all. I used to take them all and then I went through a period of never taking any and now I think I found a happy medium, Jennifer.
Oh,
so why do bananas? You know what's going to happen now? Someone's going to ring in and say, oh, that's an old wives' tale. No offence, Jennifer, but they're going to ring in and say, that's an old wives' tale. They don't do that at all.
Well, okay, that's fine.
We shall find out. Thank you. Why do bananas accelerate? I've got a nice pair. I mentioned it, didn't I, earlier? I've got a pair at home for my lunch. I have it with a bit of roquefort. If it's soft, though, if it's not soft, I don't know. Would a banana help? Would it have helped? Oliver is in South Norwood. Oliver, question or answer?
Hi, James. A question about ouzo. I had a little bit less. I had a feeling this might be something that got me, my press few buttons, but just basically simple. Why does it go white when you put water in it? Which is kind of born out of, we've just started rewatching Breaking Bad and sort of got chemistry on the mind, and I guess it's something really simple, but I've just got no idea why.
It's a precipitate, isn't it? So when you add the water to the ouzo, it creates a solid, if you like, or an emulsion.
So is it something specific in the ouzo that is different to like other spirits?
Yeah.
Like, in terms of what it's.
Yeah.
Not they are?
No, I don't.
Fair.
The word we need is emulsion, but that's not enough to take a prize. The milkier it gets, I'm pretty sure my Greek friend told me, the better the ouzo is. If you see what I mean. So if you had four ouzos in a row, an identical sized measure, and then you just dropped a few drops, an identical amount of drops of water into each one, you would have differences in the cloudiness, in the milkiness. He said better. He might just have meant stronger, actually. He was that
stronger,
kind of,
I was going to say, yeah.
He was that kind of character. Does it make the journey, do you think, ouzo? Because a lot of things we buy on holiday, which we think, oh, so limoncello, for example, it tastes like soap when you get it home. I drank some limoncello on the Amalfi Coast, and I thought it was the nectar of the gods. I thought it was one of the most delicious drinks I've ever had.
You get home.
Get back to Blighty, pour yourself a little slug of limoncello. It's like drinking fairy liquid. And there was a banana liqueur, to go back to Jennifer's question, a lovely banana liqueur that we bought on La Gomera in the Canary Islands, and again, got it home. It was rank. But ouzo makes
Very contextual drinks, you probably say.
Yes, they are. But ouzo, I think, makes the journey, doesn't it?
Yeah. We kind of dug out a bottle from we were sort of wanderlusting, given the weather at the minute, we were sort of wanderlusting after old Greek holidays and realised we had a bottle of ouzo sat at the back of the cabinet. And it was very nice.
Went down well?
Very nice.
Went down well.
I suppose
the difference is that when you're on holiday, you don't have to get up at the crack of dawn the next morning, because it does pay a price for your ouzo. It does exact a penance. I'll find out for you what makes ouzo milky. I like that. Thank you, Oliver. 0345 6060 973, if you know the answer to that. So, I've done the London one. I think satisfactorily, but there'll probably be I missed a joke there, Keith, didn't I? The woke snowdrops in the National Trust properties. They're snowflakes, they are. Thank you to everybody who spotted that gag that I managed to miss. Bananas? How do they ripen other fruits? How do snowdrops know that it's time to flower? And why does ouzo go milky when you add the water? 12:16 is the time.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973.
19 minutes after 12 is the time. Should we crack straight on? Lee's in Greenwich. Lee, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
So, James, why is it when you get upset, you get a lump in your throat? What is the lump in your throat?
I always think it's like constipated crying. It's like a bit of a sob that has got stuck.
When you're constipated, there's a lump.
No, all right, don't know. Better stop that now. That was my fault. I should never have opened that particular passage.
So, what is it? What is the lump in your throat?
You mean what is it? Literally, what is it made of?
Why does it only appear then when you're upset?
That's a really good question, isn't it?
I just got a high five off my son for that.
Happy days, happy days. Is it his question or yours?
Oh, you don't want to hear his question.
No, all right, I'll take your word for it.
He can ring on his own phone.
Yeah, exactly. He can pay the bill himself. Lump in throat. I mean, what is it actually made? Because it is. It's a physical thing, right? So I mean, it might just be a big bubble. But where does the bubble
where
come
does it
from?
Come from?
Yeah.
What is it?
That's an absolute cracker. What's your boy's name, Lee?
Paul.
Enjoy it. Nice one, Paul. Nice one, Lee. Thank you. And we shall try and get you an answer. What is it? What is the lump in the throat? 20 minutes after 12 is the time. You could hear that high five as well. I wondered what it was. That was lovely. Ian's in Godalming. Question or answer, Ian?
It's an answer, please, James.
Carry on.
It's the answer to the ouzo question.
Excellent.
It's a process called louching, where some of the botanicals that have been used in the creation of the spirit actually come out of solution and form a sort of
So it would be something that is soluble in alcohol but not in water.
Exactly. And it also happens if you chill the spirit down.
Yes.
So if you put an ice cube in pure gin, you'll start to see a tiny bit of louching happening there.
Will you?
Yep.
In pure, crikey. What is pure gin then?
So gin's dirty little secret is that it's just flavoured vodka.
That's what I thought. So when you say pure gin, you mean vodka?
No. Gin has been distilled, so you don't without adding tonic or anything like that.
Oh, I see what you mean. So just an ordinary gin, a neat gin rather than a pure
gin. Neat gin, exactly.
So this, I only discovered this last year. We crashed the website of a gin distillery.
I heard that. I thought it was very funny.
It was very. I mean, they did some great business, I think, over Christmas. But I had no idea that essentially, until you add the botanicals, it's vodka.
There's lots of different how you flavour it and what you flavour.
Of course there are, which is why
right,
phone line's going funny, but that's why now you can go to places that have got 30 different gins and they do all taste noticeably different. I love that answer. So simple solution, and it'll be probably aniseed oil, I imagine, in ouzo.
It's probably from the star anise.
Yeah.
It happens if you use too much juniper in gin distillation as well.
Yeah. Qualifications?
I'm a gin distiller.
What's the name of your distillery? I mean, you don't have to tell us, but should we see if we can crash your website?
Oh, sure, yeah. The Village Spirit Collective.
And well, I mean, what are your specialities? Is it all gin?
Yeah, so it's a community-based product, mostly gin. I get the local gin lovers together, and they help me choose the botanicals that I'm going to use for the next show that I do.
Really? That's what a lovely business. How did you get into that?
Hello.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, sorry, my line's got a bit funny.
How did you get into that? Last question, I promise.
Midlife crisis.
Look at that. I'm looking at your stuff now. Hazelmere gin, that looks nice. The Van Lane.
Van Lane's the right.
Micro-batch gin, handcrafted in the Surrey Hills.
There you go.
Well, good luck. It looks like lovely stuff. And a round of applause as well, which is better than any customer.
Thank you for everything you do.
Well, what a lovely thing to say. I suppose as a gin distiller, I should say the same to you, although it's not my tipple of choice, of course. I like it before the botanicals are added. Phil's in Cambridge. Phil, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
There's three films that I was sorting out the DVDs out last night, trying to tidy up and get rid of the junk.
Yes, well done.
And they're Clint Eastwood ones, but they're not junk. They're really good. A Fistful of Dollars for a few dollars more, and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yes.
But they're called spaghetti westerns.
They are.
Where did the spaghetti come from?
I originally thought... Actually, I know this because I've looked into it myself for exactly the same reason. I originally thought it was because they were quite gory and the guts of the shot cowboys look like spaghetti bolognese or something like that. But it's not that because they're no gorier than other films.
No.
And then I thought maybe they were filmed in Italy, which would make sense because, they definitely weren't filmed in America. I knew that. They were very often filmed in Europe, but they weren't filmed in Italy. They were largely filmed in Spain. And the answer, quite boringly, is that they were made by Italians. They were usually directed or produced by Italians.
Is that it?
And that is it. That is why they were called Sergio Leone, most obviously. And that is why they were called. That is why they were called spaghetti westerns.
So not exactly what we'd call politically correct, then.
I guess not. No, but stop being so woke. What do you want to rename them? Tofu westerns, don't you, or something?
Tofu
I know your sort. Yeah, tofu westerns, soya westerns, or something. But there it is. Yeah, it is. I like that question a lot. I can't believe it's never come up, unless it has come up before, and that's why I know the answer. But I'm very confident of that answer. That it's because of the people who were making the film. So I'll take my round of applause.
You can have one.
Thank you, Phil. Grazie mille. Tom's in Northampton. Tom, what would you like? What, question or answer?
Afternoon, James. Question, please.
Carry on.
So this is one that's been a trumped me by my daughter this morning.
Oh, yes.
Where do winds start? So you often hear on the weather forecast you've got winds blowing in from the north, winds blowing in from the east. But where do they start? They've got to develop somehow and get stronger and bigger. And how's that happen? What's the beginning?
You mean meteorological wind as opposed to flatulence?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know how old your daughter was. That'll be next week's question.
She's seven, so she'd have come up with both theories.
I mean, it's pressure, isn't it? I'm not going to get a round of applause for this, but if I'm thinking about water, oddly, I'm thinking about the, you know, that if, I mean, where does, so, you know, like a tsunami, often it means that there's been a sinkhole in the middle of the sea and then the water falls into it and then comes back out again and it sends a big wave. I'm not describing this brilliantly, but I think...
You've done what I did and tried to think you can explain it easily and then realised it actually isn't that easy to explain.
We're dads, mate. We're dads. It goes with the territory, right? It goes with the territory. So you have high pressure and low pressure, and when it changes, it creates a vacuum into which it creates a vacuum into which air rushes.
But how does it change?
I'm making this up, mate. Don't ask me.
I know you are. I tried that. It didn't work. That didn't work already.
I'll find out for you. Where does the wind begin? Where does it begin? Where. It's going to involve the words front and pressure, high and low. Yeah. But how we knit those words together to provide a question that would satisfy your daughter, I do not know, mate.
No.
So let's throw it out there.
Hopefully someone does.
Yeah, someone will, but whether they ring us or not, only time will tell. Where does wind begin? 0345 6060 973. What is the lump in the throat? We've done the ouzo one. But why do bananas accelerate the ripening of nearby fruits? And how do snowdrops know when to bloom? James is in Prestatyn. James, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Why do we blush when we get embarrassed?
Let's see if I can drag this one up from my memory banks. It's an evolutionary way of, before speech, showing... No, I got nothing. So we're doing origins this week a lot, aren't we? Of blushing, wind, lumps in throats, blushing. You mean what is happening biologically, really, don't you?
Yeah, why do we like...
What's the evolutionary advantage? It's always an evolutionary... Yeah, I know what blushing is. It's always an evolutionary advantage. Like, you know, yawning, supposedly, is a way of showing people looking at you that they're safe, because if you're yawning, it means there's not something coming up behind them, like a saber-toothed tiger or something. But the... And crying, all of these things often give out non-verbal messages. But why, I do not know. We shall see if we can find out. I hope we do, James. It's a great question.
Okay,
Thank you, mate. Mind, there you go. Yeah. Blushing, wind, lump in throat, bananas and snowdrops. Alice is in Chelmsford. Alice, the question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
It's an answer on the bananas.
Oh,
so
yes.
You're right, it is a gas. It's a blend of ethanol that's... Yeah, I called up because... I was just in a meeting with my customer who sells this gas, this ethanol. I sell the ethanol blend to him. He sells it to ripeners, who then sell their products to the supermarkets. It's an ethanol blend.
So you make to call it banana gas. You can manufacture the banana gas to hasten the ripening of other fruits.
Exactly.
Well,
I never. Actually, no. It's used to ripen bananas, but it does ripen other fruits as well.
Okay.
It's actually the other fruits that ripen the bananas quicker in the bowl rather than the other way around.
No, it's not.
So, yeah.
It can't be.
Well, you can take that up with my customer because that's exactly what it's...
Well, it must go both ways then. So,
it does.
Right.
But bananas produce less of the ethanol, which then triggers the hormone to ripen.
Well, I never... Well, no, hang on, because it's going to involve the sensitivity of the other fruit as well, isn't it?
Yeah, so when you're in with apples, for example, they ripen a lot quicker because...
So that will be the banana that's doing ethanol. It. So the banana is susceptible to the ether... It won't be ethanol, will it? It'll be ethylene or something
it's
like that?
It's a blend. It's a blend of ethanol, So, but no, because the banana... It doesn't produce as much, so when you put it in there, the apple actually affects the banana more.
I mean, I'm going to take your answer because your qualifications are impeccable, but I do know anecdotally that the banana will hasten the ripening of other fruits as well. So it's going to depend how sensitive the other fruits are to the gas, and also where they are on the ripening thing as well, because I imagine they release more of the gas the more ripe they are, do they?
Yeah, exactly.
You're on. I love it. What do you do? So you sell gas for a living?
No, I work for a chemical distribution company. We sell the liquid, which this person then sells on as a gas form.
That's a shame. I was going to say me too, Ben, if you said yes. We both deal in gas, hot air. Round of applause for Alistair, please. I like that one. Hope Jennifer was satisfied. 12:30 is the time. Amelia Cox has your headlines.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 12:34. It wasn't Aurelio Otter for the gin bloke. I mentioned his business, but he's not. He didn't make ouzo, did he? He made gin. The question was about ouzo. And to be honest, to get Aurelio Otter, he'd have to have invented ouzo. Who did invent ouzo? Don't know. Taff's in Cardiff. I told you today's show had a Welsh flavour. Now we've got Taff in Cardiff on the line. Question or answer, Taff?
I've got a question for you.
Carry on.
Why is it on a telephone, the numbers 1, 2, 3 are on the top row, but on a calculator and on your keypad on a computer, 1, 2, 3 is on the bottom row? I've been wondering this for years and no one's ever been able to tell me.
Oh, mate, we've done this before.
Oh, apologies.
No, you don't need to apologise. I'm talking to myself.
Sorry, I'm a new listener.
No, stop it. You don't need to apologise. You don't need to apologise. I've just got a horrible feeling it might even be in the board game, which means if I can't remember it, I'm going to be desperately embarrassed. Calculators and computer keyboards. Something to do with typewriters? No, it's not that, is it?
I don't know.
I know you don't know, Taff. Honestly, I shall find out for you. Hopefully, well, it's going to be a very cheap round of applause for somebody, this one. It really is. I'm sure we've done it. Or, I mean, my memory's shot to pieces and I'm remembering wrongly and we haven't done it at all. I shall do my best. We've got 25 minutes. I would put some money on us being successful in that pursuit. So what are we looking for? Keyboards, blushing, wind, lumps in throats, snowdrops. Quite a few people pointing out the wind and the blushing, it'd be due to the vegan diet. Mark Twain said that man is the only animal that blushes or needs to. That's rather jolly. Ash is in Northampton. Ash, question or answer?
Answer, please, James.
Carry on.
It's to the wind.
Yes.
So you were mostly right.
Thank you.
But what's great, there's a brilliant way you can describe this, and that's that wind is solar powered.
Okay. I like
so,
that.
If you think about heating, if you heat up a surface, the air above it gets hot. That's going to lose density and rise.
Yes.
What you're left with at the ground level is a low pressure.
Right.
That's going to draw the air towards
it. So low pressure is the amount of air in a given area.
So if you think about the regular amount of air atmospheric pressure, so 1 bar,
yes.
If you heat that up,
yes.
It will start to rise.
Yes.
You need to equalise the pressure, so that it's going to draw the air from around it.
Yeah. So I said I was wrong to say vacuum. So, well, it's not quite wrong to say vacuum, is it?
It's not. A vacuum would be the extreme.
Yeah.
But it's just, you're talking about a few millibars here or there.
So it's like a form of gaseous osmosis. No, not really, because there's no semi-permeable membrane.
Convection current is the correct.
Is it? Convection current. So as the air rises, so it sucks air from elsewhere.
Yes, precisely.
And that causes momentum,
and then it will,
i.e. wind.
It will then be deflected by the spinning of the earth,
yes.
The Coriolis force.
Oh.
So it will go anti-clockwise
right.
In the north and clockwise in the south.
So you can predict where a wind is going to come from by looking at what the temperatures are in places at that time just previous?
Vaguely, because it will depend on sort of the way it works, but yes.
So what is there a better answer to the question of how can they say there's a big wind coming in from the north?
Yes, because what they can do is they can look at the atmospheric and surface pressures. So you would normally use what's known as the 500 hectopascal chart, which is sort of half atmospheric pressure way up in the atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah.
And look at the difference between the two, and that will tell you where the wind is going to be.
I think that's a really good answer. What are your qualifications?
I remain a chief officer in the Merchant Navy and a lecturer in navigation, meteorology and stability.
And how many rounds of applause is that now? Lost count, haven't you? You're not going after Professor Howe's record. That's a long way off, but you.
Oh no, he's still an idol of mine, and I enjoy going to his museum.
So. Oh, look at that. Round of applause for Cameron. Thank you, mate. I love that one.
Thank you.
That's a really nice one, and I think that will, well, hopefully that will satisfy Tom. Where are we going? That was Ash, not Cameron. Sorry, what am I talking about? Cameron is in Putney. Cameron, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on, Ash.
I've got a little question there about number plate systems in the UK. So, obviously, the current one we've got...
Be still my beating heart.
What happens when they run out of number, sorry, letter combinations.
How old are you?
19.
Yeah, you see, it's already happened.
Has it?
Yeah. It's already happened and they started again. So when I was a kid, the
oh, so yeah, obviously the old system, yeah. Yeah. Oh, of course, yeah.
So you might, you know, but my parents, I can still remember some of the old registration numbers, but you know, it might have been RBT426T, and it was yeah. the T that denoted what year it was, whereas now you've got the number. So they just mix it up again, won't they, in some
yeah.
way?
Makes sense.
That is the first motoring question I've ever got right in nearly 20 years of Mystery Hour.
Oh, I'm glad.
That's astonishing. I didn't learn to drive until I was in my 30s. If the petrol head thing is a gene, I didn't get it. But there you go. I knew that just by dint of being so very, very old. And that is that's a good answer, right? You're satisfied with that answer?
Yeah, wonderful. It's very
all there.
Satisfied.
It's all there.
Thank you.
A round of applause for me.
Cheers.
Thank you. On a motoring question, go me. Apparently, there's some job vacancies coming up in the motoring journalism arena. So maybe I should be throwing my head. It's not maths. It's motoring. It's what they do with number plates. Number plates on cars. Ergo motoring. Naji is in Hendon. Naji, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
I'd like to know. I've been listening to radio a lot recently, but also just through conversations on the phone. I want to know why we can sometimes hear people smiling.
Oh, that's a lovely question. I mean, it's not that difficult.
I think it's
difficult.
A really good one, just because you know, a couple of your colleagues on LBC, I notice it quite regularly. Sangeeta Meister is a very good one. She's you can tell when she's smiling when she's talking.
Yes.
It's a fantastic example, and also just when you speak to people regularly on the phone, and sometimes you can tell without them laughing or without making any other associated sounds that they are in fact smiling when they're talking.
So, I mean, how do you think you can tell? I think we could probably work it out. If I start smiling, my eyes, everything moves on my face, which means that there's probably a slight difference in tone, isn't there? Let's see.
I think it might be something to do with. As you start smiling, something in your cheeks means that the production of saliva just gets, you know, your mouth produces saliva a bit more regularly.
It's more likely that the bottom of your chin is tightening up. So it's less, you know, you smile and everything gets a little bit tighter. So your voice goes, maybe even goes up a bit when you're smiling.
And then that changes the pitch or the tone of the sound that you
could
make.
Could do. And it's also when you smile... When you smile. I think it's moving forward in your mouth as well. The problem is I smile so much. I'm such a cheerful fellow. It's very hard to imagine what it would be like to broadcast on the radio in a bad mood, Naji. How can we tell? And on the phone as well. So I love it. It's a great question. I've got a feeling that when we hear the answer, we'll go, oh, yeah, of course. But we haven't got to it yet between us, have we? So we shall put it on the list.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You smiled then, didn't you?
I did.
QED or something. 12:42. Catherine is in Leiden in the Netherlands. Catherine, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
So my question is about the phrase double Dutch. So me and my boyfriend, who is Dutch, were in the UK over Christmas, and we got speaking to a lady, and she said to him, well, I hope you don't speak double Dutch.
That's a bit rude.
I know, right? Anyway, my boyfriend asked me, what does double Dutch mean? And I told him it meant nonsense. So he then asked me, why is it Dutch that's been compared to nonsense? Why not French, Italian, Spanish, etc.? And I had no answer to that whatsoever.
It'll be William and Mary, won't it? It'll be William of Orange coming over. I
would think there's some sort of historical context to it, but I couldn't, you know... I couldn't think what one.
No, I can't either. Yeah, you're on. Double Dutch. Why double Dutch? I mean,
yeah.
Highly good geist. Maybe it's because they do sometimes... I don't know. I can only think of one word in Dutch to support my theory, which is geist, which means ghost, right?
Yeah.
Because there was a Dutch lad at school, and when we do the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, he'd say the Heilige Geist.
Yeah.
So, and that sound there, is that common in Dutch?
Yeah, they have a really harsh G sound,
but that's two G's.
To English is
highly geist.
Yeah.
So that might sound. So maybe that it sounds like an English word, but double. Therefore, double. Yeah. I don't know. That's not going to win any prizes, that answer, is it?
Unfortunately not. I don't think so.
No, I think you're probably right, Catherine. Let me put it on the board and see what transpires. Why double Dutch? Why does double Dutch mean nonsense?
Thank you.
No, thank you. It's a lovely question. These are all going to be crackers for the next round of the board game. But we need some good wrong answers. I just gave one. There you go. Double Dutch is because so many Dutch words sound like the English words, but with the first consonant repeated, as in gegeist and ghost. It's 12:15.
With business, you're like, this is it, I've got it licked, I know what I'm doing. And then you walk around the corner and you get punched in the face because you just aren't expecting that next thing.
Sage members like Jamie can manage any unexpected surprises with our helpful business tools and advice from real experts. Sage, helping business flow.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12:48 is the time. Lots to get through. Let's crack on. We need answers to the origins of double Dutch. Why you can tell someone's smiling when they talk, even if you can't see them. Why the keyboard is on a computer, the numbers are 789 across the top, on a calculator 123 across the top. Why do we blush? We've done the wind. What is the lump in your throat? And how do snowdrops know when to blossom? If you can answer any of those. The problem is now, this has happened at various points over the years. People were ringing in with questions, blocking up the phone lines for people who want to get through with answers. So I had no idea that I had so many Dutch speakers listening to the programme. I have spent 35 years thinking that the Dutch word for ghost was gegeist, because a lad at school used to say heilige geist for holy ghost. It turns out the Dutch word for holy is heiliger, and the Dutch word for ghost is geist. So my theory on why double Dutch might have had something to do with consonant repetition at the beginning of words that sound English is completely enough. I mean, even beyond wrong. So it's heiliger geist, not heilige geist. 35 years, 37 years I've been thinking that. 37 years. It's like Mystery Hour. Every day's a school day. Kaya is in Putney Hill. Kaya, question or answer?
It's a question, I'm afraid.
Carry on. Don't worry, there's still time.
Okay, good stuff. Right, so I do a lot of driving for work, and I see the same road name reoccur every now and again. Is there a cut-off in the distance allowed for the same road name to reoccur?
I like that question a lot. I don't know if we're going to have to get literally space on the switchboard for an answer, but I love the...
Okay.
And it's not really motoring, it's place names.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you get it with Deliveroo, and also when you're now using your online maps and stuff like that to get somewhere, and you can accidentally...
You end up 3 miles away or 10
yeah.
miles.
So if it comes, exactly. So if it comes up and says that will take you 406 hours, you think, I think I've got the wrong street name. But if it comes up with a vaguely feasible amount of time, if you don't clock the postcode, you could do yourself a mischief, couldn't you?
That's it, exactly. So I was just wondering, is there some sort of rule or anything in place to stop that?
You'd hope
happening?
So, but at different councils, I bet there isn't, you know. I think because we've had questions about this before and it comes down to the council, it's not done nationally. So, I mean, it would be an accident and they could check, but I don't know that there's a requirement in place. If you had an Acacia Avenue on one side of a border and Acacia Avenue on the other side, it could. I will find out. I imagine they look, but I bet there's not a rule because there'd be no one to enforce it, I don't think. Thank you, mate.
Okay. No worries. It's all good stuff. Cheers.
12:51, Ed's in Bridgend. Question or answer?
I've got an answer for you, James, and I know it's against the rules, but potentially one of your questions leads into the answer to another one as well.
Whoa. Just do what you've cleared with the producer. I don't like to get involved in these shenanigans.
So
another Welsh caller, though. We're massive in Wales today, aren't we? This is incredible. Carry on.
So it's to do with why we flush. So essentially, this is just the body's response to stress, anxiety or fear. Hmm. And there's a number of different physiological things that happen, lots of complex things. But in essence, you've got two different types of nervous system in your body. You've got your sympathetic and your parasympathetic. Your sympathetic is your fight or flight response, and it does lots of things. So it makes your heart rate go up. It diverts blood to your muscles so that you can be ready to run or fight. But also what it does is it makes the blood vessels in your cheeks bigger so that your cheeks have more blood flow and they go red.
So it's the fight or flight syndrome. There's no evolutionary benefit to your cheeks going pink.
It might be communicative in an evolutionary sense, in that it might demonstrate to, I don't know, a potential foe that you're ready to, you know, either run or to fight them. I would guess.
Yeah.
And that'll be it. It's to do with adrenaline release.
But it's all about the blood vessels, really, the adrenaline in the blood vessels and the nervous system.
The adrenaline hits these little receptors in your blood vessels and it opens, makes them dilate and open up.
So even if you're embarrassed, you've got fight or flight going on because, you know, you want to get out of the embarrassing situation or you want to sort of style it out.
Well, exactly. And it's the same with if you, I think people blush when they're, you know, attracted to someone as well, don't they? Because that situation is a anxious situation.
Get me out of here.
And it does actually link into the lump.
I told you not to do this.
Oh, I won't then.
Thank you. Qualifications?
Doctor.
Ah, you see, you're not used to being told what to do, are you?
No,
used to bossing
not.
Everyone else around. Drop your trousers, all that sort of thing. Round of applause for Ed, please. Thank you, Ed. And yes, I can see why it plays into the lump in the throat one, but we do need... Oh, but now I'm going to regret that because I haven't got time to get an answer to the lump in the throat. What causes the lump in the throat? So the smiling one we've done. Not smiling, the blushing one we've done. Simon's in Coombe. It's Coombe Martin, I think, in Devon, isn't it, rather than Coombe?
It is.
Coombe Martin. Lovely part of the world. Question or answer, Simon?
I've got an answer to the why your voice sounds different when you smile.
Fantastic.
When you, your mouth is a vocal filter. I'm an audio engineer. Your mouth is a vocal filter, so when it's relaxed, you make a much sort of more forwards in the mouth sound. And then when your cheeks tighten when you smile, you then get a much tighter sound.
Yes.
So when you make a wah sound, it's in the front, and then when it tightens, you go further back.
Yeah.
And then you also have different vocal resonators in your head. You have one in your forehead in the cavity, and then you have them in your cheeks. And as your mouth tightens and the different muscles in your face move with the smile involuntarily, you then use different parts of your head to make the sound.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. It really does. It's a really lovely answer, actually. Qualifications, but I mean, we wouldn't necessarily... What sort of engineer? A sound engineer?
Yeah, I'm an audio engineer, music producer, and two of my clients are vocal coaches.
That'll do nicely. Have a round of applause on me.
You're welcome.
That was a lovely... Near Ilfracombe, aren't you?
I am indeed.
I love that part of Devon. Lovely stuff. Thank you, mate. Carry on. Phoenix is in Coventry. Phoenix, question or answer?
An answer for you.
Carry on.
I have an answer to the order of numbers, the difference in order of numbers on a telephone and on a calculator.
Yeah, I got confused there. It's the difference between a telephone and a keyboard, computer keyboard or calculator. It's not the difference between a computer keyboard and calculator because they're the same. So on a telephone, 1, 2, 3 across the top. On a computer keyboard and a calculator, 7, 8, 9 across the top.
That's correct, yeah. It's a relic of the old system. You must be old enough to remember the time you had to stick your finger in a hole and pull the dial around and the phone would go click, 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 click.
Yes.
So the order of the numbers on an old style telephone was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7, 8, 9, and then 0. As inside the phone and at the exchange, that mechanism would send clicks down the line to tell the exchange how to dial. So a 1 would be 1 click, a 2 would be 2 clicks, a 3 would be 3 clicks.
Yes.
But a 0, which obviously doesn't have value, would have 10 clicks.
Yes.
Because it's the furthest number round on the dial. And it's simply a relic of that. So that has been passed down the line, so to speak, onto digital phones.
There it is. So, but why didn't they do that when they invented calculators and computer keyboards? Why didn't they just copy the phones?
That's a good question. I haven't got an answer to that one, I'm afraid.
Oh. Do we need an answer to that bit of it? Yeah, we really do, actually, don't we? Because the question is, why are they different? Not why is a phone laid out like a phone is laid out. The question is, why are they different?
I think it's logic on a computer keyboard because you go 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is going from bottom up, of course.
Is it? 0,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, you have 7, 8, 9 on the top, don't you?
Yeah.
Or 9, 7, 8, yeah.
But why is that logical?
Well, because it's in numerical order.
But it would be in numerical order if it went 1, 2, 3, 4, across the top. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Well, no, because you'd end up with naught at the bottom.
So you've got the lowest number at the bottom. You mean you've got the lowest number at the bottom on a computer keyboard and a calculator and the highest numbers at the top?
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a round of applause because I like you. Because I like you.
Thank you.
But I don't know that you've gone definitive. Back to Wales. Tim's in Pembroke. Tim, question or answer? Did put Pembroke? Do you know what they've done, Tim? Were you listening earlier when the fella rang in from Carey Crossigig or something? In Wales?
No, I just picked up in the last...
Don't worry. Fella rings in from Carey Crossigig, something like that in Wales, and they don't put on the board, in brackets, pronounced Carey Crossigig. You know, like one of those Welsh place names that are very hard to get your head around.
Yeah.
But for Pembroke, they've put in brackets, pronounced Pembroke. What is going on in this studio today? No phonetic advice, no phonetic assistance for Carey Crossigig. But phonetic assistance for Pembroke. God, my mind boggles. Question or answer, Tim?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
Snowdrops.
Yes. Thank you. Sweet cheeks.
You're welcome. All seeds respond to changes of temperature.
Yes.
So if you put, especially when you put a layer of snow on the ground, you get almost like a magnifying glass between the snow and the ground underneath. That heats the ground up. The snowdrops think, wow, it's spring, and up they come.
But how come they're coming out for the fellow that asked the question, the second week in February every year?
That is purely because of the change. As we head towards the spring, it gets warmer. If we get a particularly cold snap like we had a few years ago, everything will be late.
He insists not, but I think he might be mistaken.
It has to be temperature.
It can't be anything else. It can't be magic or a clock, like an alarm clock goes off and all the snowdrops go whee.
Absolutely not. All plants either respond to temperature or hours of daylight.
Qualifications.
Hours of darkness.
Qualifications.
Avid gardener. Well played.
No, fantastic. Are you any good with aloe vera plants?
Actually, yes.
Sheila's here. I'll ask you next week. We'll definitely get a gardening question on next week, and then I can ask your advice about my aloe vera. No, I haven't got it because it's quite complicated. Okay. I'll be here till the news. Round of applause, please, for Tim. I'm going to give the game this week to Lee, but really to Paul, because A, he didn't get an answer to his question about lumps in throats, and B, because I think everyone should high-five a nearby family member when I describe their question is brilliant. I love that sense of, it's like team all joining in together. Don't forget Global Player to catch up on today's show. You can also find all the world's biggest podcasts there and LBC's entire back catalogue. Download it for free from your app store. Head to globalplayer.com. Tom Swarbrick with you at 4. Sheila Fogarty with you next.